Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a pre-daylight savings episode of Sour Graps. We're going to travel through time while I'm talking to you if you're watching this live. But why would you be watching this live? Seriously, come on, people. I talked to myself, ostensibly, about what happened on Raw, which was fucking nothing, for 81 minutes on Tuesday night. I mean, I was pissed about a lot of stuff because, you know, it's me and it's WWE. But I probably talked about that damn Muppet Spider for 15 minutes. I'm going to try and keep the SmackDown one brief because the entire second hour was one match with one story. So it's hard to be like get into it, but I'm sure I will. So we'll see. It's it is 12:01 a.m. Central Time, which means it is 1:01 a.m. Eastern Time. And if I talk for over an hour, then it will go from 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. Eastern Time. I don't want to talk for an hour. This show should be done in 20 minutes, but I'm going to keep babbling because I guess that's the magic of the show. Oh gosh, guys, I hate this company. I hate them. I hate everyone who works for them. Not the wrestlers; they're fine. But why do you do this? Why do you put out this stuff? Why is this good to you? You've got Elimination Chamber on Sunday. Why would anybody watch that show? Why? Oh, there's one important match. Two-ish. And the most important match, the one that they're promoting is like that's on the poster. Everybody knows the fucking ending to it. Unless you believe the thing that like Vince has lost confidence in Shayna, and so he's gonna drastically change the outcome of the obvious WrestleMania like building match that like so Shayna's not gonna win, so who's gonna face Becky at Mania? Asuka again? Sarah Logan? No, it's Shayna. Here's what I would do if he really lost confidence in Shayna. Here's what I would do. I'd have Bianca Belair attack somebody backstage and claim ownership of whatever spot in the pod that they had. I'd have her run through everybody and win it. But Bianca Belair versus Becky Lynch. I love Shayna, but if that's not your cup of tea, Vince, like you don't want somebody who's methodical and slow moving or whatever. Like you want somebody who's just going to be like all fucking fireworks as on the mic and do that. But we're not even going to talk about Elimination Chamber predictions until after this. We talk about SmackDown. What am I doing? I don't know. I'm tired, guys. It's midnight, and I'm talking to, well, three of you are currently watching the stream, so welcome, three of you. And also, the literally dozens of people who will be watching this on FightfulSelect.com. I do feel bad for Alexa Bliss. Like, she's said at some point that she wants somebody to give her mic back, I think is what I've heard. And she hasn't cut like a real wrestling promo since she's been back from injury. Not really. It'd be nice if we could see her do that, because that was kind of the thing that got her over to begin with. Hosting a stupid talk show, that's you don't have custody of a real mic. So I like to see, who knows? But I like that she fought for her buddy Nikki Cross to be part of this segment, apparently, because they started out promoting it as like Alexa Bliss talks to NWO, and then it'd be like somebody like constituted the Photoshop and put Nikki in there too. So good. Although all Nikki is there to do is take a selfie. Anyway, so Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross are out there, and as a woman of Bliss, and Alexa says, which I'm totally fine with her saying this. Hey, Asuka and Kairi Sane, the women's tag titles are supposed to be defended on both brands, all brands. So why are you only on Raw? And Asuka would be like, because I'm one of the only legitimate contenders we have on this brand for the singles title. So I kind of have to be here doing that because there's literally nobody else. They had to bring a lady up from NXT to have to be a challenger. Charlotte is doing other things. If Charlotte's not the challenger for Becky Lynch, and let's be honest, nobody wants to see more of that, do they? I don't. Not for a while. Those two can be magic in the ring together, but like, too much of a good thing is bad for you. And for the business. But if it's not Charlotte, it's Asuka. I guess Kairi Sane could get a shot, but then there's also your problem of the tag titles not being on all the brands. So they had to bring up Shayna. Ruby Wright's back. I'd like to see a Ruby Wright versus a Becky Lynch match. I have no interest in seeing Natty anywhere near a title. I just don't. It's my own personal preference. I know she's technically sound. I know she's, you know, an OG of the women's division. And I don't care. I don't enjoy watching her. I don't find her interesting. Sarah Logan was brought up far too early, as was Liv Morgan. I think Liv has improved. And so is Sarah Logan. I mean, you know, she got all those reps working Dana Brooke every week on Main Event for like 6 months. So, of course, she's gotten better. But I still don't know what the hell. She was a redneck, then she was a Viking. Now she's a special guest referee. I don't really know anything about her. And Liv Morgan. I still don't know what the hell her character is. Like, they were like, I'm real now. Well, you took the pink out of your hair. And apparently you've broken your addiction. Your crippling addiction to Blue Jolly Ranchers, because the tongue is a correct shade of pink now. Did you just switch over to pink Jolly Ranchers? That would have been that's actually quite clever. So I used to like Blue Jolly Ranchers, but everybody was like, "What's up with your tongue?" And now I eat pink ones, and nobody says anything. And I can continue my crippling addiction to Jolly Ranchers. What am I saying? What's happening? Yeah, the tag titles need to be defended at WrestleMania. If Asuka's not in a singles match, she needs to be defending. They need to be defended at Mania. Everyone's saying Divas of Doom. Fine. But you know me. I like people who are everyday members of the roster to get title shots. So if it's going to be Bliss and Nikki Cross, cool. Cool beans. I'm in it. Whatever. Anyway, then they called out the NWO minus Hulk Hogan. Gee, that's too bad. I really wish we had seen more of Hulk Hogan. Anyway, they go down to the ring and they talk about the NWO going to the Hall of Fame. And my favorite part was that Nikki Cross asked X-Pac characters like Sean Waltman. What do we call you? Do we call you X-Pac? Do we call you Sean? Do we call you Sax? Because of the really thick Scottish accent. And he's like, you call me Sax? Like, he didn't understand that she was trying to say six. It's so weird that they treat Sean Waltman, X-Pac, is one of the founding members of the NWO, even though he was so definitely not. Like, he was earlier in there than a bunch of guys, but he wasn't a founding member. It just, they want to give Sean a double induction into the Hall of Fame, and good for Sean Waltman. Whatever. But they ask Kevin Nash, did you give any advice to Roman Reigns about his match with Goldberg? And Kevin Nash says, I told Roman that if he wants to beat Bill Goldberg, he needs two things. He needs Scott Hall and a cattle prod. And I'm like, yes, I do remember that terrible angle that you ran in WCW almost as egregious as ending Aleister Black's undefeated streak by having him lose in a handicap gauntlet match was also Bill Goldberg losing his undefeated streak because Scott Hall dressed up as a security guard and tasered him with a giant cattle prod stun stick thing. And that was how Kevin Nash Pindle Goldbergy to become the, that was it, like Starcade 98? Yeah? So many of the people who are watching this show, not this show, but SmackDown and Nash mentioned that without any context, were like, haha, what? I wasn't alive then. Could you give me some proper context? By the way, who is the weird old guy, the bald dude who's got the title? I don't know who he is because I was born after 1997. Say a lot of people. It's a weird thing that they do where they decide everybody loves old guys because they remember old guys, but like there's a lot of people who don't. And to them, an old guy is Cena. Because they grew up watching him and they have no context for who Kevin Nash is. I mean, they should if they're super fans or whatever, but like, I thought you liked casuals. I thought you programmed to casuals. The casuals is what you're in. The casuals don't know who any of these dudes are. Are we supposed to know who they are? NWO, I vaguely recognize that name. But you don't really, I mean, yeah. Anyway, this all comes to an end because there's a giant pause because Scott Hall's supposed to say something that's supposed to cue the music and Scott Hall doesn't because he's Scott Hall. And because, you know, that's a lot of stuff that's happened to Scott Hall in his brain in the past 25 years. But the music finally does hit. It's Shinsuke Nakamura's music, and Sami Zayn and Cesaro Nakamura come out, and I was warned by our Jeff Hawkins that they were teasing, and they were, a 3-on-3 match between Shinsuke Nakamura, Sami Zayn, and Cesaro, three men in the prime of their life who are among the top 25 wrestlers in the world, even though they are booked like shit on the show they currently work for, would have been beaten down by three elderly gentlemen. Now, I know Nash is in very good shape, but he's old. Hall can barely walk. And Waltman. Throw a kick. Let's see if you tear your scrotum again. You know, like it's fine. We can have reverence for these old dudes without like making them seem like they're superheroes for life. It's for life. I don't like it. But thankfully, they didn't do that. They didn't make us do that. They just had Sami Zayn come out and talk trash to Nash and Hall. He respectfully says, Razor Ramon, you're one of the top, you know, intercontinental titles of all time, holders of all time. And, you know, Big Daddy Cool Diesel once was the intercontinental title holder, champion. And I did like this joke. He says, and you know, Xbox 6, Sean, Mr. Waltman, you know exactly how much the IC title weighs because you carried these guys' bags for so many years. And I was like, oh boy. That's cute. That was a good line. I liked it. But anyway, it all felt they get challenged to a match, and Sammy says no. And then Braun Strowman comes out, and then Sammy uses Alexa Bliss as a human shield. And then the three guys who were supposed to fight Braun Strowman all run away, and Braun Strowman says, this Sunday, you're going to get these hands. And then he two sweets, all of an NWO. And I say, we need to just come up with our own hand signal. It's the opposite of the two sweet. It's the two sour, which is when you use the pinky finger and the index finger to touch your thumb. So it looks kind of like little bunny foo-foo hopping through the forest. But yeah, this is the two sour. Two sour, my brother. Good for the NWO getting into the Hall of Fame. Whoop-de-doo. Braun Strowman is either going to lose his first intercontinental title defense, his first singles title defense ever. He's never going to lose that. Or he's going to beat three of the top 25 wrestlers in the world by himself. You're not obligated to book yourselves into a corner, WWE. You know that, right? You know that, right? Okay. Somebody's going to have to explain to me at some point why Naomi and Lacey Evans are friends, other than it makes Lacey Evans look good because they put her with Naomi, and Naomi seemingly isn't like, get this white bitch away from me. Because, Jesus. The hat. The fucking hat. It's sillier than the super duper glow stuff that Naomi wears. And Naomi doesn't even get to do her full entrance because she has to come out down to the end of the ramp and then stop and wait for Lacey Evans to strut out there wearing the friggin' Rose Bowl parade float on her head. Bayley and Sasha Banks defeat Lacey Evans and Naomi in a tag match, which is a scintillating rematch from last week. Tune in next week when we're going to do it again. Bayley and Sasha Banks teamed up. Bayley used a distraction attack kind of thing on Naomi, and Sasha pinned Naomi. So obviously they're better at being a tag team than Lacey Evans and Naomi, who probably in real life hate each other. And if they don't, they should. But backstage later in the night, Bayley and Sasha are talking about how the rest of the women's division in SmackDown is crap. And it's true. It's very true. I mean, the books like crap. They're not. They could be good, but they're not. They're not good because of how they're booked. And so they say, let's take the rest of the night off and let's take the rest of the weekend off. And what I love was that they were, she said something like the rest of the women need to take a step of their game and blah, blah, blah. And then she tweeted out later, gosh, I need to find this. Hold on. Well, I'm going to vamp while I find this tweety tweet. She mentioned that the women need to, like, you know, step up their game or whatever. Right. And, yes. So then this morning she says, I'm giving myself the weekend off last night. Thanks, Sasha Banks, for a great night. And then she says, on Twitter this morning, after I've had the night to think on it, I'd like to encourage my entire SmackDown women's locker room to take the weekend off too. You guys really need to evaluate the priorities heading into mini season. You're welcome. And what is great about this is that there are no women from SmackDown, none, not a single one, booked for anything at Elimination Chamber. And so while it seems like she's giving a little dig to the women of SmackDown, she's actually like, seriously? Neither woman's title is being defended at Elimination Chamber. And no SmackDown women are on the pay-per-view. So she's like, seriously, creative, you got to come up with better stuff than this. At least that's how I read into it. But then, of course, Carmella responds, well, LOL, we already had it off. Yeah, Carmella, that's the joke. Anyway, yeah, there you go. I do like Bailey throwing some shade at the people who can't figure out what the fuck to do with their anybody who performs in the ring for them. Sheamus squashed Apollo Crews because Apollo Crews didn't want to listen to Shorty G, who's like a motivational speaker now, kind of. I don't know. It's a stupid storyline. I haven't heard Sheamus call them vermin yet recently. So that's good. They got away from that. Let's stay away from the Nazi rhetoric, people. Let's just do that as a rule. Thank you. I do appreciate it. I'm not going to talk about that match. The match was over so fast, and who cares? Who cares? Who cares what Sheamus does? Sheamus promised he was going to be in a Elimination Chamber match that doesn't even exist. He's obviously delusional. And Shorty G, excuse me, that's your slave name, Chad Gable and Apollo Crews, what are they going to do? Team up in another handicap match versus Sheamus and lose again? Oh, wait, they are probably next week, you say, on SmackDown? Because they've completely run out of fucking ideas? Okay, good. Let's all look forward to that. Drake Maverick is talking to Drew Gulak backstage. And he says, I've heard that you know all the weaknesses of Daniel Bryan. Can you teach me? I want to have a match with Daniel Bryan. And I love that in storyline, at least in Drew Gulak's headcanon, Drake Maverick is still his former boss. I don't know. Is Drake Maverick still I haven't watched 205 Live in forever, guys. I was a 205 lifer. And I don't have any reason to watch that show anymore. I just either say all the great guys who are under 205 pounds in NXT are also on 205 Live and you are going to see them every week. And also all the 205 Live guys are also on the NXT roster. And there's a chance you could see weirdly like tatted up Jack Gallagher now. I mean, it's not as bad as Cody's tattoo, but it's just some weird tattoos. Maybe you'll see him show up in NXT and have a match versus, I don't know, Killian Dane or something. That'd be fun. But until you tell me there's a real crossover, I haven't watched 205 Live in a while. So I don't know. Is Drake Maverick still the GM there? Don't tell me. I don't really care. But we also haven't seen him on SmackDown since he got his ass literally spanked by Elias. So remember Elias was like white knighting Dana Brooke for like 3 weeks, and then they dropped it entirely because they had no idea where that was going. It's a fucking mess over there, people. They have no idea what they're doing. None. The incompetence and the just staggering. But anyway, I love the idea of Drew Gulak still calling Drake Maverick Mr. Maverick, because it was his old GM over on 205 Live. By the way, then Brian interrupted and said, hey, you know all my weaknesses and everything. Well, how about you have a match with me in Elimination Chamber? And I'm almost crazy enough to believe in my heart of hearts that Daniel Bryan wants to lose that match to Drew Gulak to build a feud. Because, I mean, that's the best storyline, right? Where, like, Daniel Bryan is overconfident and Drew Gulak does know all of his weaknesses and can counter all of his moves and is like watching film of him and knows when he's going to, if he does this move, he usually does this move following it. So here's a counter to that move. That's what he should be doing. He's a really smart wrestler. He's a technical wizard, this Drew Gulak. I'd love to see him pick up a win over a very surprised Daniel Bryan, who then that lights a fire under his ass and he wins the feud with Drew Gulak, because come on, Drew Gulak's not winning that feud, but he could pick up a win, a very much needed win in that feud. I think that'd be great. Do I have any confidence they're going to do that at Elimination Chamber? No, I don't. Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville walk down to the ring with Dolph Ziggler. So they're all in on this Dolph Ziggler, Mandy Rose thing. Sonya Deville is just basically an also-ran. She's just there. She's a third wheel. She deserves much better than just being the third wheel, because I do think she's much, much more talented than Mandy Rose across the board. And I think that she should be a star in her own right, as opposed to just following along behind Mandy. It's weird. They were facing Carmella and Dana Brooke. Dana Brooke did one of those weird running one-legged drop kicks they teach the women to do. Becky Lynch does these too. Most of them do. They teach them how to do this, and they make them do it in every match that they're in. And they always look fucking horrid. And this one was so bad, like it missed Sonya Deville by a foot and a half, and Sonya Deville sold it like she got, you know, shot in the face with a howitzer. And of course, I don't know if it was Corey or Michael Cole was like, I don't think she got all of it, but I love when they're honest enough to do the, I don't know if he got all of it, but not honest enough to be like, hey, maybe we should tell them not to do these moves anymore where they don't get all of it. And the wrestlers are also not honest enough to be like, you didn't get all of it, so I'm kicking out at one. Or I'm not letting you pin me at all. I'm getting up off the mat. Hit me with something that actually connects. When you have the announcer be like, all right, well, I didn't get all of it, but then it's like a near fall, well, then these guys are belying each other. So you should figure out a way of like, hey, the announcers are going to call it as they see it. If it's a glancing blow, don't sell it as though you got hit in the face with a howitzer. Sell it like it actually was a glancing blow, because then it'll actually match up with what the announcers are saying. Or have the announcers call everything as though it was a devastating strike to the temple. How is Sonya Deville going to get up after that? Anyway, there's a distraction of Dana Brooke by Ziggler. I wonder where Elias is. Is he going to White Knight Dana Brooke and have a match with Dolph Ziggler? Oh no, wait, no, he's not. He's gonna have a match with Baron Corbin. So Baron Corbin, I mean, listen, the gimmick is shit. The whole King thing is shit, but he's held it together. He did exactly what they asked of him. I mean, what they asked him to do is go out and be stupid, and a lot of times to wrestle boring long matches and to have a feud with Roman Reigns that is fucking nonsensical. But he kept all that shit afloat for months. And where does he appear to be heading into a feud with Elias? I did appreciate the irony of King Corbin saying to Elias, "You're just a gimmick. You look stupid." And Elias being like, "Who do you think you look like?" I think that's fine, but still, like, I don't care for either of these people on my TV right now. It's a shame because I used to like Elias a lot. I don't care about him at all. And Corbin, the King thing is just so weak. How long does he have to wear the damn crown and the fur shawl? How long does he have to wear them? It was months ago now that he was King. Like, it's you could give up. You can do. Is he going to wear it all the way through SummerSlam? King of the Ring tournament was, I think, in like September, wasn't it? It's been like 7 months. We can move on. Remember how he won the under the giant memorial battle royal, and then he immediately got called up, and they had that thing, that giant stupid trophy by the ring every match he wrestled. Like he carried it around with him like it was his fucking car keys. They do that boy no favors, I tell you. At least I guess the silver lining is he doesn't dress like a waiter anymore. So thank God for small miracles. They do a recap of the Fiend's challenge to John Cena, which was I don't know, man. You got to have the thing of him pointing to the sign. I'm going to say this is what they should have done. Lights go out. Cena is standing there saluting the crowd after saying, "By the way, John, come on." You mean like you have him come out and say, I respect the future of this business in a way that we all want all of those guys of Cena's era and prior to come out and say. We want them to come out and say, "I respect the future of this business too much to take a spot away from somebody who spent their entire year earning it by coming here to work every day, every week, on the road, several days out of the week. They don't see their family. They don't see their loved ones. And for me to come in and just snake a Mania spot, that's not fair to them. So I am not going to be on Mania." We want all of these guys to say that. So to have him come out there and say it, and then immediately go, "Whoops, nope. This guy who's wearing a freaky clown mask pointed at a big sign, so now I gotta have a match with him." tip of the cap. I was just like, come on. Come on. John Cena comes out and says all that stuff, right? Says all that stuff. He stands there. Salute, right? Salutey salute. And then lights go out. He's standing there. You do the cool shot where you can't see the Fiend, and then the camera moves and you do see the Fiend. And then the Fiend brutally attacks John Cena. That's what you should have done. Brutally attacks him. Puts him in the mandible claw. Hits, gives him a Sister Abigail on the stage. Now, I understand probably why they couldn't do that is that there's an insurance policy on John Cena from some movie that he's in that says he can't do all those things because he might get hurt and miss time from the movie that he's scheduled to work on, which is why I don't expect it to be a long story built, drawn out, you know, let's do a callback to their big moments from that match 6 years ago. I don't expect them to do that at all because of the whole thing I'm saying with the insurance policy on John Cena, which is probably what they have. But should have been Sister Abigail on the stage, mandible claw, and then you have the Fiend prop up John Cena so he's barely conscious, but he is looking at the sign, and then you have Fiend point to the sign so John Cena can see the Fiend's hand pointing, and then you have the Fiend just drop John Cena. So John Cena knows that he's pointing the sign, knows why he did it, but you have the Fiend attack Cena, so just coming out there and going like, I'm a guy wearing a mask and I'm pointing at a sign. And then you have John Cena immediately go, okay, all that stuff I said in the ring was bullshit, apparently. I think you should have had the Fiend goad Cena via Firefly Funhouse videos for like a month. And somewhere in there, I mean, it can't be a month, right? It's a problem. Because you waited so long to do a build. But it'd be nice if a couple of weeks of that. And finally, the Cena does accept the match. Yeah. Or, you know, what might have been fun is if the Fiend never had the title to begin with. And then hadn't had all of his momentum completely sapped by losing to a 53-year-old who can't do a vertical suplex anymore. That would have been a good thing they should have done. I was just thinking, it'd be kind of cool if Cena had said, no, I'm not fighting you. And then Shorty G. I'm going to put him out there because I feel like it would work for him. He says, you know, John Cena, you're one of my heroes in this business. And I don't like what the Fiend did to you. I think that's crap. And I will fight him in your stead. I will be the guy who takes on John Cena. Everybody's like, whoa, are they doing a John Cena versus Shorty G match? No, they're not going to do that, right? Really? Are they? And they're not, because then the Fiend like takes out Shorty G, takes out Chad Gable, just puts him on the shelf, like does something horrible to him. I don't know what. And then John Cena says, okay, now you made me angry because I liked that kid and I'm pissed. So now I'm going to fight you. And you have Chad Gable help John Cena defeat the Fiend because, let's be honest, John Cena is winning that match. So I would like to see John Cena win that match because he needs help from somebody to beat the Fiend, then rather than the Fiend just lose clean. So then, immediately after that, when John Cena fucks back off to Hollywood, you got Shorty G who says, now I'm healthy and now I am going to fight you, the Fiend, and the Fiend can have a little thing with Shorty G because Shorty G deserves better than being squashed by Sheamus. I'm sorry, Chad Gable. Shorty G is your slave name. I keep forgetting. It's my fault. It's my fault. Anyway, all that is to say that I really did enjoy the Firefly Funhouse segment here with Bray Wyatt. People saying, why would you challenge John Cena? And then Ramblin' Rabbit saying, oh, I know. It's because 6 years ago at WrestleMania, he totally destroyed you and began a downward spiral into darkness and self-doubt for your personal and professional life. That's why, right? And Bray's like, yeah, pretty much. And that's great. That kind of continuity is awesome. We need more of that. We need more of these guys remembering why they hated each other years ago. And Bray Wyatt never getting over the fact that his momentum as really one of the faces of this company for years it should have been. He was on fire going into that match with John Cena in that program. And of course, Super Cena won because Super Cena wins. And then ever since then, he's been kind of a joke. And he had to reinvent himself because nobody could get over the fact that, well, yeah, Bray talks a great game, but then he loses all the big matches. Yeah. And it started with that match. And Bray, the person, the Mr. Rogers character, notwithstanding, but the person himself doesn't blame John Cena, but he certainly in kayfabe would. So I like they're giving that as a motivation, and I did like the idea that everybody that it's a circle, everything's a big circle. We all go around and around and around again. So we all spinning around the sun. That's us. And I think that's kind of cool that he uses it like when you're going around in a circle, much like the moon, there's a light side and a dark side. And eventually it's always going to get back around to one or the other. I thought that was pretty good. So good. I hate that it was like, I pointed at a sign. And, oh, I tipped my hat. Now we got to have a match. I hate that. I hate that a lot. But I do appreciate that they're, you know, at least delving into some kind of continuity. Guys, it's the final angle. It's the last hour of SmackDown, but it's only one match. And, I mean, where it's 1:43 a.m. on the East Coast. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it all the way until 2 a.m. immediately becomes 3 a.m. I don't know. I guess I'll try. Oh, wait. No, I will. I'll make it all the way because we have Elimination Chamber to talk about how much that fucking sucks. So, okay, good. Oh, okay, so Otis tried to talk to Mandy Rose backstage, and he said, Mandy,
I want to apologize for leaving you hanging at the restaurant, but I do have text messages here that said you were going to be running late, so that's why I was running late.
She's like, Otis, it's just too late. I mean, a woman doesn't like to be stood up like that. Somebody, I'm begging you for the love of God, tell me why Mandy Rose just hasn't watched the film of the Valentine's Day episode of SmackDown, the show that she works for and can easily get video of to see that Otis did get a text from somebody. We assume it's Dolph Ziggler, which means it's probably Sonya Deville, but you know who it actually is more than that? It's probably Tucker Knight. Because they're gonna run the same friggin' crap they ran with Enzo and Big Cass. Now, it might take them a while, but absolutely, Tucker is going to lay out Otis backstage. And we're all going to go, what happened? Why? What? Who could have possibly done this? And then we'll find out it was Tucker, and he'd be like, blah, 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 blah. I'm angry. I'm the heel now because they said I am. Oh. Anywho, Mandy Rose, somebody tell her, somebody inform her that there is video evidence of Otis getting a text message that says Mandy's going to be late. And anyway, so she's all pissy. She's not, I don't like to be stood up like that. And so, Tucker's like, oh, forget about her, man. Let's go have our match. And so, this was the coming out party for Heavy Machinery, and it was pretty effective. It was. It all depends on where they go from here. I don't think they're going to become the champions on Sunday in this match, the Elimination Chamber match. Because I don't think that's in the cards for them, but I think what this was supposed to do was prove that they belong in our minds at the level of all the other tag teams in there. I mean, obviously they're above the Lucha Brothers. Lucha House Party. Obviously they're above them because LOL, am I right? But well, we probably wouldn't have thought of them. Maybe we thought of them on the level of Rude, Steady, and Bebolf. But we didn't think of them on the level of the current tag champs, Miz and Morrison, or the Usos, or the New Day. So how do you combat that? Well, you give them victories over the New Day and the Usos. And Miz and Morrison. You give them victories over those guys in this gauntlet match. And so we have to think, well, maybe these guys are can do it because we just saw them do it. I mean, there's a couple of roll-ups versus the Usos and the and Miz and Morrison. But they straight up pin Big E clean as a sheet. They beat the New Day. They straight up beat them in a wrestling match, which I did not see coming. So they're establishing, obviously, the Street Profits as a top tag team over on Raw. And so they're trying to do the same thing, I think, with this match for Heavy Machinery. And it worked. It worked. I thought the New Day match was obviously the best of all of them. It was the Lucha House Party. I mean, come on, LOL, am I right? But although I do love Grand Metalik, and it pains me to no end that he gave up so many years of his prime to this company who had no fucking intention of using him properly. He came into the Cruiserweight Classic 4 years ago as one of the top cruiserweights in the world. Because Zack Sabre Jr. and Kota Ibushi said, we actually don't want to sign with WWE because we're smart, self-sufficient wrestlers and don't need that headache in our lives. Because of that, they had to put him in, they put Metalik over Zack Sabre Jr. So that he could be in a title match versus TJ Perkins. And then they picked Perkins over Metalik because they wanted the guy who speaks English, I guess, to be the first Cruiserweight title holder. And the fact that Grand Metalik is one of the only guys from the Cruiserweight Classic who made it to 205 Live and stuff like that to never become champion. He's like one of the three or four, I think. Or even, I believe, have a title match. That's too bad. Because I, you know what? I don't know when his contract is up, but he needs to get the hell out. He's one of those guys who needs to get the hell out and go someplace else and do something else. Because that's not okay. Because he's really, really good. And they never let him be that. But anyway, the Lucha House Party as a team, LOL, am I right? But so they beat them. Otis kind of beats them single-handedly. And then the Usos come in, and the Usos are fresh. And this is where I thought, okay, well, the Usos are going to beat Heavy Machinery here because the Usos are fresh, and it'll be a really cool, hard-fought part of the Gauntlet match. And because the Usos will therefore be worn down from facing them, then I realized, because of how they decided to book this. Oh, no, wait. The Usos and Heavy Machinery are babyface teams, and there's only heel teams left, which means the last two teams in the Gauntlet match are not going to both be heel teams. That's not a thing. That's never going to happen. They won't do that because there'll be no heat for the end of the match. I mean, there was very little heat for the Heavy Machinery Lucha House Party portion of the match. But they could have easily switched everything up, the order of the Gauntlet match, and it would have made a lot less predictable. I like Dr. Knight being the smart one, figuring out how to roll up, reverse a pinfall on one of the Usos, and then smart enough to catch Morrison in a roll-up. Why do you put the tag titles on a tag team and then say you're going to lose every single non-title match until you have a title match? You'll win that one, and then you'll lose every single non-title match until you have a title match. You'll win that one, and repeat that over and over and over again until you have them lose the title match. Why is that a thing that you do? Why is that a thing that you do? It is a thing you do with everybody. I don't understand it. All your heel tag team title holders. It was a Revival over and over and over again. It's ridiculous. The Miz is he's got his own goddamn reality TV show. He's a big star for you. He's been in a lot of movies for you. He at one point main evented WrestleMania, and his tag partner is John Morrison, who is one of the very best most athletic wrestlers in the world. He did a cartwheel elbow drop. Find a gif of this shit. It's amazing. On the top rope. Flip. Elbow drop. Amazing. Never seen anything like it. He's in the absolute prime pinnacle of human athletic prowess. Look at that man. You could cut diamonds with his abs.
Let's have him lose all the matches in which the title's not on the line. I know what a great idea that'll be.
Anyway, I appreciate that Tucker is the smart one because we know Otis isn't. And then after the match, after the sudden roll-up, Miz and Morrison are super pissed, and they do a assisted, like, double stomp assisted. Like, Morrison jumps off the top rope and hits a double stomp to the back of Tucker's head as Miz does the Skull Crushing finale, which is interesting. I don't know if it worked this time, but it's got potential as a move I like. And then they threw Otis through the barricade in the Timekeepers area. And then Rude City B-Balls come out. And they do a lot of rest holds to Tucker Knight while Otis isn't even on the apron for people to, like, get jazzed about a potential hot tag. But eventually, Otis gets back up on the apron. He knocks Rude out, kind of, on the by, you know, smacking his head into the plastic cover of the announce table. And they put him on there, they put him in, they have Otis tag in, and he thinks Rude's a legal man, and Ziggler surprises him with a super kick, and Ziggler pins Otis, and so Otis is upset. And we're supposed, and Mandy Randy Rose is upset. Kind of. I mean, not really. But she's like, I don't know, I'm conflicted. So I'm just gonna stand here and look vacuous. But after the match, in a promo that no one will see because it only wound up on Twitter, they had Tucker Knight do an amazing promo about how Heavy Machinery, we always told you we are machines and we're not going to stop. I love this man. This man is my brother, Otis, and I would die for him. And that's what you need to have to win to the tag team titles, to have that kind of love for each other. And I was like, really cool that it was like honest about that. And like, but the way he did it was such energy and exuberance and thoughtfulness. It was a great, great, great promo. Something I did not think Tucker Knight had in him. And the best part about it was that Otis stood there mostly silent except for occasional grunts. And at the end, he said, "Because we're coming, Tucky." And I knew that Tucker Knight has far more potential to be a top guy in this business than Otis does. Otis is a fat guy comedy character. Now, he's going to be over forever because people like his shtick, but he could never like transcend into being an actual character. He hasn't shown any of that yet. He may have it within him, but he hasn't shown any of that yet. He just does this. And he shakes his belly. Sometimes he does this with his tongue, which is really weird. But Tucker is really athletic. He's also very big. He can cut a really great promo. Obviously it's stupid to say this, to make this comparison, but it did feel very Dusty Rhodes-esque, just like that whole old-timey feel of like, this is why we're going to win because we got heart. It felt really authentic and real, and I don't know whoever's going to see it, but the people who are in charge see it, they should really think about figuring out a way to make Tucker a bigger and more important part of this feud. Okay. By the way, we are going to make it Eastern time zone, people. If you're watching this in Eastern time zone, we are going to travel through time together very soon and go from 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. Eastern time like that. The other thing that is interesting and very hopeful for me, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, if you're not actually watching it, or if you're doing it like me where you are watching the show SmackDown is on the TV, but you're really mostly looking at your phone because SmackDown sucks. They're doing this thing where they have like static-y thing, like a static, and then it goes away. And more and more every week, it still keeps going. It goes staticky for longer, and then the images pop out more or whatever. And eventually, from this episode, I saw what it was. It's a blue ring of light, which is what Mustafa Ali wears on his chest. So Mustafa Ali will be coming back very soon. And they're doing little weird vignettes about it. So I don't know how they're going to do it, but Mustafa Ali is coming back and he's going to save everything. He's going to make everything okay because Mustafa Ali is coming back and he's bringing his little ring of light with him. And that's good. Hey everybody on the East Coast, just went from 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. Set all your clocks forward. We just traveled through time, baby. Can we travel through time all the way until Monday so we don't have to watch Elimination Chamber? Let's talk about what's on that card. Shall we? Okay, here's what's on the card. Let's do it in reverse order. Daniel Bryan versus Drew Gulak. I already talked about that. Hopefully Daniel Bryan wants to put over Drew Gulak. Wouldn't that be fun? Andrade versus Humberto Carrillo. I have seen Humberto and Andrade Carrillo. I have seen them wrestle each other too many times. I don't know. Maybe this is the night they put the title on Humberto Carrillo and Angel Garza takes it off of him. I don't know. I don't know how that works. I do feel like we're getting a four corners, fingers crossed, ladder match at WrestleMania between Andrade, Rey Mysterio, Angel Garza, and Humberto Carrillo. I want it to be a ladder match, but I want it to be, but I'm not sure that it's going to be, but I'm almost certain we're going to get that fatal four-way at Mania for the U.S. Championship. So that'll be fun. AJ Styles versus Aleister Black, no disqualification. All this is so The Undertaker can come in and attack AJ Styles because it's no disqualification. After the attack, then Aleister Black will get the win. So Aleister Black won't even be an agent in his own victory. I'm still hoping they make that into triple threat, where it's Aleister Black versus AJ Styles versus The Undertaker at Mania. I don't know how they get there, but the only reason this is a no disqualification match, the only reason this the match is happening is to get The Undertaker out there. So that's fun. Street Profits versus Rollins and Murphy. This will be the third time they have had a title match in, I mean, like, what? 9 days? Their third title match in 9 days. I wonder if they were saving anything good for this one. We'll see. Again, either Braun Strowman finally gets a singles title run, an intercontinental title run, and you then immediately take it off of him in his first title defense, or he smashes three of the best wrestlers in the world at the same time. Those are your options. Those are two very bad options. You didn't need to book yourself into that corner with two bad options. You could have done other things. Thank you. Again, Miz and Morrison, New Day, Heavy Machinery, Lucha House Party, Ziggler and Rude, and the Usos in the Elimination Chamber match. I still think Miz and Morrison are winning. I think it'd be really stupid to take the belt off them this early. And I don't think it's possible for either Ziggler and Rude or Heavy Machinery to win. I don't. Because I still think we're getting Otis versus Ziggler with Tucker Knight in one corner and Robert Roode in the other corner. And I don't know why I think this. I was thinking shark cage for a while. Mandy Rose in a shark cage. A Mandy Rose on a pole match. But I do believe they're going to do Mandy Rose special guest referee in the Otis versus Ziggler match. And make Mandy pick a side. Who do you like more, Mandy? Who do you like more, Mandy? Do you like Dolph or me more, Mandy? I'm coming! So, because we're going to get a Ziggler versus Otis match at Mania with Mandy Rose as special guest referee, neither of those teams can win the tag titles in the Elimination Chamber match. So I think Miz and Morrison retain, and then they face the New Day and the Usos in a triple threat for those tag titles at Mania. And then Elimination Chamber match. Winner faces Raw Women's Champion Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. Natalya versus Liv Morgan versus Asuka versus Ruby Riott versus Sarah Logan. And gosh, I'm missing one. Who did I forget? Oh gosh, yes, it's the only one who could possibly win, Shayna Baszler. Now, there's a lot of stuff going around that Vince has already soured on Shayna Baszler because apparently he didn't know what kind of style match she wrestles. And he didn't like the people were chanting this is boring and hurt and Kairi Sane. I mean, those fans were kind of stupid to chant that, if you want my honest opinion, because, I mean, it wasn't the best match that they've had against each other, certainly, but it certainly wasn't agented for it to be that way. And I think it was a really screwed up thing that they said, hey, let's have her debut, come in and bite our champion. Like, make her a vampire. She bites her in the neck. And then not do anything as a follow-up to it. Like, I don't want Shayna to be a vampire, but, like, I did it because I felt like it is a stupid thing for them to explain away the fact that she exhibited vampiric tendencies. So, yeah. Shayna is winning this match. Do I think Shayna and Becky can have a good match at Mania? Yes, I do. Do I think they will? No, I don't. Because I think it'll be agented all wrong to not show people the best sides of them. Most of the time, talent in WWE is asked to do things that do not play to their strengths. And I think that's going to be the case with a lot of stuff at Mania, but particularly this Becky versus Shayna match. I'm holding out hope that somebody other than, you know, somebody, I don't know, Sarah Logan or Liv or Ruby gets taken out and somebody like a Bianca Belair becomes part of this thing. I think she can. It would be really cool. It'd be out of left field, man, and a fun way of doing it because this match is so predictable and it feels like they're gonna do it, put it on last. There's got to be something. Some people are thinking it's gonna be Ronda Rousey that comes in and does something. And I mean, maybe. But I'm not gonna watch Elimination Chamber tomorrow night. I'll watch tomorrow night, but not live, not while it's happening, because there's nothing that is too pressing. Like if I find out after the fact, you know, that Miz and Morrison retained, or whoops, the Usos won, it's not going to change anything. Again, you have two bad options in the Braun, you know, versus in the Braun handicap match. Are they really going to take the titles off of the Street Profits and put them back on Seth and Murphy? Are they really going to do that? I mean, they could. That would be stupid, though. So that match doesn't make any sense. The Undertaker's dong is going to show up in AJ Styles versus Aleister Black. Whoop-de-doo. Kind of ruin that match. It'll be fun while it lasts until the dong shows up. Went to a lot of parties like that in college. But Andrade versus Carrillo is going to be good, but ultimately I don't care. And hey, maybe Daniel Bryan will put over Drew Gulak. That's it. Like, there's nothing here. And then obviously, Shayna Baszler is winning that match, the Elimination Chamber match. You didn't have to do this. All of these were bad decisions. All of them. It's Goldberg beating the Fiend was a terrible decision. Having Roman just come out and say, hey, me, I want that. That was stupid. You could have had six relatively interesting challengers in that match. An Elimination Chamber men's match from SmackDown. You could have done the Elimination Chamber women's match on SmackDown, because we have no idea who the hell is going to face Bayley. It's probably going to be Sasha. Let's hope that it's Sasha, but we don't know. We know it's going to be Shayna facing Becky. I can't think of a more pointless. Elimination Chamber event. So, yes, while there were a lot of things on SmackDown that showed positive growth, it's good that Heavy Machinery is being presented as a possible future title holder, because I would not have thought that. I thought they might win one at some point as a transitional champion. But now, who knows? Especially because Tucker apparently is a promo god. Promo demigod. That's good. They are teasing that Mustafa Ali is coming back. That's great. Let's get on that as soon as possible. Those are good things. This has been Sour Graps. I have been Alex Pawlowski. And while those are good things, everything else sucked.